Hello and welcome to The Cage Equation with Malcolm Mickelson and me, Drake Mickelson, where we calculate who's to blame for ruining the perfection of a Nicolas Cage performance. To do so, we take the Metacritic score subtracted from 100, which gives us the points we must assign in everlasting blame. This time, we watched Longlegs, a slow burn, overclass devil-worshipping horror flick, or perhaps it's a haunting meditation on the chilling effects on how childhood trauma clings to a young FBI agent like the fading fingerprints on a lone handrail in a park. Either way, it was released in July of 2024, made $10 million off of was made for under $10 million, grossed $107 million, was 101 minutes long, directed by Osgood Perkins, and starred Micah Monroe, who starred as the FBI agent Lee Harker, Blair Underwood, starring as Agent Carter, Alicia Witt, Lee's mom, Ruth Harker, and of course, Nicolas Cage, the titular character, Longlegs, aka Dale Ferdinand Cobble. Malcolm, how did you enjoy the movie?
It is one of the better movies we've watched recently, I think. I don't think there's enough Cage, but we can talk about that more later. That was my one complaint, was not enough Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, I felt the same way. It was like there's a lot of stuff that was too much, maybe, and not enough of him. I kind of broke it down into like a few different, like in three basic ideas on this whole thing. Well, four, but the writer and the director are the same person again. I talked a little bit about the direction in a bucket. I put down the Nicolas Cage in a bucket. And then I had another bucket called the worst FBI ever. They were not a good representation of the FBI. You see them, the FBI is represented differently in almost every different movie. And this one is understaffed, weirdly under. Just everything.
This is the psychic FBI, though. Just partially psychic. A little psychic. Why did they put the psychic part in there? I don't understand what the point of... Sorry. Well, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself. But for some reason, Micah Monroe is a little bit psychic. They make a big point that she's not fully psychic. Just a little psychic.
Just half psychic.
She can sense where the bad guy is, but can't sense that opening the door is a bad idea.
Yeah, they called her half psychic, which is better than not psychic at all. Because she only guessed the number between 1 and 100 half the times, while they flashed some type of screens of different shots of oblong shapes and stuff and asked her questions that didn't make any sense.
But we start with Cage. We always start with Cage.
Absolutely. So strong shot at the very beginning, jumps in, has the opening scene there with his long leg. He wasn't wearing his long legs today, which is where the entire title of the movie comes from. That's how he signs his notes. And from there on in, I think he was great all the way through.
Yeah, he was. My biggest thing with him is there's an episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia where Danny DeVito's character is stopping a nosebleed. His face gets all puffy. And they use essentially the exact same makeup for Nicolas Cage in this. Made it hard to take him serious.
At the same time, it was spooky. And it was like, this guy is the kind of guy that would be down in the basement making dolls.
Yeah, no, it was disturbing the way he looked, for sure. It's hard to tell it was Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, and then the voices were good. The sing-songy stuff he was doing. He had a couple freakouts in the car when he started screaming, Mommy, Daddy.
I was kind of bummed. It felt like he was only there for part of the movie, though. He does the opening intro, but then it felt like half the movie didn't have him in it. And then he shows up and he's in the rest of it, which is nice. But it was a lot of buildup. A lot of buildup when I wish they had spent more time with him.
Yeah, it's like 101 minutes long. I read somewhere, he basically has under 10 minutes of actual screen time. I timed it from the opening shot where he's in that for 30 seconds?
Tops. And most of it, you can't see him. It's just the long legs.
Yeah, it's 45 minutes later before he shows up again in any way, shape, or form. And even then, it's just a glimpse for a second before they do come back to him pretty quick. But it's a 45-minute stretch of watching Lee Harker and the worst FBI director ever. I don't know, he wasn't actually a director, but I don't want to watch her skulk around and be nervous. And every scene with her and it was just uncomfortable.
Yeah. And spending the time introducing his family. And I mean, I get why they do it. They come back at the end, but it was a lot of weird decisions as far as where they spent time and world building.
And then there's just the character question of, this guy's her boss. So he goes out and he gets drunk while she sits there and watches him get drunk. And then she says, well, I'll have to drive. He goes, okay. And then you're going to have to come in and meet my family. let me wake up my daughter after midnight to come out and meet you. And then you're going to go spend some time alone with her in her room. And she's going to ask you some weird questions. And you're going to act in the most uncomfortable, weird way possible around my family the entire time.
Yeah. And they weren't even partners. It's not like he was introducing his new partner to them. She was just, I think, on temporary assignment with him and his actual partner.
Yeah. And he knew that she went through the stuff with the, I mean, at the beginning, in order for us to know that she's psychic, she identifies the house. Oh, gosh. We're getting into the bad parts. But Nicolas Cage, great. I loved his voices. I loved his acting and everything he was doing in it. It does seem, I wonder how many days, once again, he was on set. I'm guessing a week, probably tops. Yeah, and I did like also the fact on the makeup that they made him as young and then he got older. Not many actors would let themselves look. I mean, we've had actors that let themselves, you know, be made up into gross monsters and everything else. But that shot of him when they're interrogating him, what's on the video, he's just old and withered and gross, not aged. It is just, he's a disgusting looking human being. And the fact that he's like, yeah, let's make me look really bad. Not even like bad, like in a cool way or something. Let's just make me look like somebody that nobody ever you want to sit next to on a bus.
That's the difference between an actor and a thespian.
Yes.
The dedication.
Absolutely.
Okay, into the bad.
Into the bad. Most of it, I think, goes with the writing. I thought the direction was good. But anyway, this Lee Harker goes in there. She's, I don't even know. She's psychic because she identifies the house to send her partner in and tells him to go answer the door when they're looking for a homicidal maniac and then hangs back a good 15 feet so that he can get shot.
Yeah.
Also, I'm not sure the FBI usually goes around banging on doors in some suburban houses, yelling, it's the FBI, randomly on different doors.
Yeah, you think they'd be more subtle about it. That whole scene made no sense. And I think they try to set it up that he goes, do you want to be the one knocking or the one standing back? But she is, when you say that, I imagined he's standing here and she's standing kind of offset behind him.
Yeah.
Not, like you said, 15 feet away around a corner. And then she just barges into the house.
And other than that, and then she goes through and she catches the guy. But at any point in time, and we don't even know what this guy is doing or why he's doing it or what's going on. But at any point in time, she always looks like she's having a nervous breakdown.
I mean, I would be too.
I think probably the FBI, when they see somebody, it looks like they're having a nervous breakdown at all points of time, doesn't send her out alone to go try and find a homicidal maniac, doesn't send her out to try and find a serial killer, doesn't put them in the room with their 9-year-old daughter.
But she's partially psychic.
We've proven it because she's watching a slideshow. And also, when did the FBI start inhabiting old churches? Because that's what the vibe I was getting at every time they had with the wood paneling.
Yep.
The bad wood panel. It looked like they had just taken over like the local Baptist church. Now we're in the church's basement. Now we're in the Sunday school room.
I felt like the whole movie was shot. Most of the movie was shot on the same property. Like it felt like that was just a part of someone's house. And then they had the barn. And then they had the mom's house. But it all felt like it was being shot in a very small area.
Which is okay. And I think they did an okay job with that. But spend a little bit more money and get a couple more locations. Also, just like take over an old school or something, which just has plain old cement walls. Make it look like a government building. It was weird. And then they ran through the whole thing with her where she shows that she's a quirky investigator because she laid out all the pink index cards with numbers on them and then fell asleep on the floor while she was looking at the files.
And then she, on top of that, I hate it when the main character doesn't share information. Like she breaks all the ciphers and they're like, how'd you do that? Oh, I just did.
Yeah.
I don't like that trope. I'm not going to tell them the whole truth because she has no motivation to not trust the people she's working with.
Yeah. And also the fact that like, I guess the one motivation they did give is they said, if you tell the FBI where this came from, I'm going to kill your mom. But if somebody's threatening your mom and you're in the FBI, isn't the first thing you do is call somebody and tell them, hey, could you go pick up my mom because she's been threatened by the serial killer that we're chasing?
Question about that, because it turns out he's living in her basement.
Yes.
How long had he been living in her basement that she didn't know, like since she was a kid?
Yes, the entire time, because he put the thing in her head to make her forget and not see. They had the little thing. So the little silver ball, which we don't know what that is either, was messing with her mind the entire time. So how did she get past, once again, worst FBI ever, how did she get past any kind of psych evaluation, given the fact that
she doesn't remember large portions of her life?
And she's got a demon running around in her brain, I guess. I don't know. And it's not doing a good job at it. It's just literally making her forget stuff all the time.
That was an odd decision on their part. So Neon is kind of big for having like big plot twists at the end. But this one felt like kind of like a new M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, there's obviously going to be a plot twist and there's only so many options for it. And I couldn't decide if the twist, I think the twist was the mom being a part of it, but also it being like actual real devil worship, like an actual satanic theme at the end. But I didn't feel, both of those just felt like they were thrown in. Neither one felt like it was building to that.
And it's like, so Neon is the production company, them. And then what is the other one I saw that we've seen a lot of Nicolas Cage movies lately is Saturn. And I think that's actually his personal production company, which is why he got the producer credit. But it's one of those twists, like we're going to have a twist, but we're not actually going to show you any of the pieces leading up to it. If you say Shyamalan, the main one ever, of course, is The Sixth Sense. And if you watch The Sixth Sense the second time, you almost feel stupid for not seeing the twist at the end, because it literally just kept spelling it out to you over and over and over again. Very clearly was showing you these pieces, but the storytelling was so good that you missed them in what was going on. And this one, I can tell you from personal experience, I've watched the movie twice, the end is just as tacked on even after you've seen the whole thing, because there's no point during the movie, other than when the mom's talking a couple times, that there's any hint of what's going on at all.
I was wondering, can you see his car in the background at all? Did you notice? I didn't think so.
There's a car underneath, but it's not. No, you can't. There's no real thing. The only thing that you could probably piece together is that he's in a basement and that she looks at the basement door at that one point in time.
Yeah.
But even then you're thinking to yourself, obviously he's not down there or hasn't been living down there, because she grew up in the house. She would know that there was a man living in the basement.
Oh, see, you forget the silver ball.
I know, but the silver ball is never, I mean, they find it that one time in the doll, and then where the X marks the spot in the oddly lit barn. That was another one that cracked me up. It's like they go to the farmhouse, the lights are off on everything except for the one barn light. There's no electricity. It's
supposed to be abandoned, right?
Yeah. And I guess that's true. I've seen some farms that do that too, but that was so weird. Also, if that farm was abandoned, there's no way it's in that good of shape anymore.
No. Because it seemed like it was abandoned after the murders.
Of the girl that was in the insane asylum.
Yeah.
I don't know. So anybody that's listening, obviously, the whole point of this is somehow Nicolas Cage is a doll maker, a demonic doll maker, who sends dolls to a house. And that house then possesses everybody in the house and causes a murder-suicide amongst the family, usually involving the father. I guess Lee Harker's family got spared because the mom made a deal to help him do that.
He said everyone got that offer too, which is weird to me that no one else took him up on the offer.
And well, not only that, no one took him up on the offer, because when he gives her the offer, it's because he ties her up in the house and physically assaults him. He never goes to any of their houses. I don't know. It's not well. I mean, I don't need all the pieces put together, but there's no pieces at all. It's just a jump. There's this here, and then we're going to jump cut straight to the answer.
No, I didn't think the writing was very good on that part. I thought the director was pretty good.
Yeah.
It's a good shot. It looked really good. And then the rest of the actors were fine. Like you said, I think she was just playing probably how she was told to play it. But I've seen her in a couple other things, and she's usually pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
She was very jittery in this, Micah Monroe.
But I think she's supposed to, once again, she's playing what she's supposed to be. It's not a question of her character. It's a question of everything else in the world of, if this is, in fact, her character and this is who she is, how does this person become an FBI agent?
Yeah, I saw her in It Follows. She was good in that.
Yeah. And then I should also mention, did you see then the director, Osgood, which I love that name. It's like he's a Batman villain in the making. Osgood Perkins. His dad is actually Anthony Perkins, who is famous for playing Psycho in the Alfred Hitchcock movie Psycho.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But his dad also directed several movies afterwards. And was also well known as actually a good actor too, on stage and screen. So he has gotten a lot of language from him on that. And I really like the direction. The cinematography was beautiful. And then he had that thing. Did you notice like every single shot, the character was always in the middle?
No, I didn't.
So basically, it's almost like what we're looking at right now. And like every time you look at any of the shots, it was perfectly balanced, with the character would be directly in the middle, and then it'd be on either side. And what I noticed when I was doing that, because it just kept happening over and over again, I kept drawing my eye to behind them. I kept thinking when something was something was going to pop up behind them because it wasn't, they weren't filling the screen. They're a very small part of the screen. There's all this blank space. I think that's what built a lot of the tension, was you kept waiting for something to be behind them, which unfortunately, when the one time somebody was behind them, it didn't work at all, was when the mom was behind the woman in the car.
Yeah.
And that was the least surprising part of the entire movie to me.
I mean, other than, again, the stupidity of the FBI agent staying in her car.
Oh, the stupidity of, there's a serial killer out there who's killed himself, has mentioned this woman's mom. All this stuff is going on, and they decide just to drive her home and just drop her off out there for no reason. What are we?
She's going to investigate.
But she's not investigating. That's the whole thing. They're not, it's not an actual investigation. I think it's one of the worst FBIs ever in movies. I think every FBI is a little different here and there. Like, there's the Silence of the Lamb FBI. They're pretty on top of things. And they did kind of the same thing, but they did it for a reason, but much better reason than Half Psychic.
Half Psychic's a pretty good reason.
That is true. That's a pretty good reason.
Half the time, she's going to be helpful.
And the other half, she'll just send you. Oh, yeah, she got two other FBI agents killed by basically leaving them alone when she knows something's wrong.
Yeah, the Half Psychic thing kind of worked against her, it felt like. It kept her out of safe. I was wondering if the Half Psychic, it must be because of the doll thing, right?
Yeah, I would guess that's giving her the powers. So, I don't know. It didn't obviously explain that either. And once again, I don't really need it explained. I just needed a little bit more than that.
I think it being such a short movie worked against it.
Mm-hmm.
Or they could have just cut out some of the beginning and explain things.
Yeah, that a lot of the beginning of it, like 45 minutes of setup, was just ridiculous.
Yeah.
We did some of the Cage. I would like to point out that Cage has basically got one, two, he's had like six scenes. And it was the opening scene, his scene in the car when he went to the convenience store, which was pretty good. And he did the little cuckoo thing with his eyes. The arrest scene at the bus stop, which once again didn't make any sense.
Oh, yeah, he's just standing there, isn't he?
Yeah, and like they know he's there in the middle of nowhere, so I'm not sure how where that came from. That would have been a good thing, just a little 3 minutes of phone calls from the FBI. Hey, we've seen this guy at this place, this place, this place. And then the interrogation. And then the last
interrogation scene was the best scene in the movie, I thought.
Yeah, it was real good. It was a surprising, then also his faceplant into the desk was a good one. The weirdest thing in that, I haven't mentioned, out of 100 points, this one somehow got 70. Do you think it's a 77 out of 100?
I didn't. I also think most of his movies get rated too high on Metacritic. I don't know if I like Metacritic. That's what I'm deciding.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, so in comparison to his other movies, it was better, which would put it in the 70s. But I also saw some reviews that said the best scary movie since Silence of the Lambs. So I disagree with a lot of the sentiment around it.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like it was that scary.
I didn't think there was anything scary at all. There was no point at all. It was scary. It was frustrating a couple of times. The end scene was just completely with the at Agent Carter's home with the last doll, the mom and the FBI's family and the 9 year. I didn't understand that one at all.
No, it's like they needed a big climax and they ran out of ideas along the way.
I mean, how many, and then the daughter finally pulls out her gun and does something. It was like, how many people have to die before the FBI agent decides, maybe I should stop this?
She was torn.
Well, she
she's torn. Couldn't decide between saving people's lives and not.
And not what? What was the other side of the coin on that one?
Not saving people's lives.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have a whole lot of notes about it. It was boring. It just fell flat.
It's too bad, too. And it's like, once again, I think the director and writer are the same person. If that director would have taken that story and given it to another writer who actually could write, because some of the dialogue wasn't great either a lot of the times.
Yeah.
And then maybe had a few things and put a few things in there and just kind of, I don't know, they're trying to be minimalist and not give everything away, but then they didn't put anything in. And also I noticed the word was actual, like a word dialogue that was used a lot.
Yeah.
All right. So on this one, since we only have 23 points, I'm going to say, I don't think that any of the actors, even there was the one actor that kind of bothered me, but I think once again, the writing was the hospital director.
Oh yeah.
But he was trying to do something, but I think unfortunately it just didn't work with what was going on. I did like the line when they asked him, They asked him if they have a sign-in sheet, and he goes, that does seem like that would be a good idea. Like it never occurred to me. We're running a mental institution. Maybe when people visit our comatose patients, we should actually, have a video or have, check IDs. It was check the ID.
Security, something, yeah.
Check the ID somehow. And that one was pretty funny. And he really didn't even bother me. Once again, I think it was all just writing with him. So I don't want to give the actors any points here with this one.
No, I'm okay with that. I'm okay giving most of it to the writer.
I would say all of it to the writer because the
Okay.
direct, I don't see anything in the direction. I also would like to throw out that the writer, I'm not sure again was the director, but I wrote this line down because it meant a lot to me. It was when he came back and they were after they went and visited the girl at the mental institution, they're sitting there talking to each other, and the agent Carter says to his young agent, last week this investigation was ice cold. Then you come on to it. And it's flowing like, I don't know, hot lava. And this poor, the actor who did it was that Blair Underwood. He was like a pretty big time TV actor, especially in the 80s. He was on, I think, Law and Or not Law and Order, LA Law. He was kind of the hot thing for a while. And he's a good actor, but you can see him just trying to turn that line into something and like, hot lava. It's flowing. I don't know, like hot lava. Okay, so yeah, 23 points. 23 points to the writer.
Yeah,
All right.
agreed.
All right. Well, I think this is kind of also one of the worst kind of movies for us to watch. Nicolas Cage was great in it, but he was hardly in it at all. It was kind of boring, but it was very competently done. Everybody did a good job. It was just at the end of the writing's that bad and it doesn't go anywhere. There's not much to talk about. I think we've had a couple like that. It kind of reminds me of The Wicker Man in the same way,
Yeah.
except where, you had a couple good yelling scenes with Nicolas Cage, but everything else was just so quiet and understated the whole time. There's not a lot to talk about.
Not a lot happened from the
No.
start to the finish.
No. All right. Well, I guess we'll wrap this one up then. It's a little shorter one than usual, but it's kind of what the movie deserves. 23 points to the writer, Osgood Perkins, which is great because he was completely great as the director. So I guess that all evens out in the end. Until the next time, it's been Malcolm Mickelson, me, Dre Mickelson, and we'll see you next time with the Cage Equation.